Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. The Healing Muse, the award-winning annual literary and visual arts journal from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities, is celebrating its 10th anniversary year. And joining us again this morning is its editor and a regular guest on this show, Dr. Deirdre Nealon, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities. Welcome, Dr. Nealon.
Thank you, Linda. It's great to be back.
Well, you know, it's an incredible accomplishment. You know, 10 years of literary and artistic contributions to this community.
I know. It's gone by in a flash.
Yeah. Let's remind our listeners who may not be familiar with the Healing Muse about your mission.
That's a great question. Our mission is somewhat simple. We would like to further the dialogue between clinicians and patients, and the dialogue between patients and caregivers. In other words, everyone is going to have a turn, unfortunately, on that wheel that takes us to illness, healing. Many times people don't have a chance to talk about what it's like hearing a diagnosis, going from a diagnosis into the prognosis, going from the prognosis into the treatment, going from the treatment into where we come out at the other end. And one of the, I think, blessings of the Healing Muse is that it gives an opportunity for people to really wrestle with what that was like, and then other people can read the Healing Muse and find out that they're not alone or learn a new way to think about things.
So it's an annual literary journal, but it's also visual, so you have some examples of visual art in there as well.
Yes, that's been a very nice addition. When we first started, we really weren't a visual journal, but now we are, and that's been a very exciting part for the editors to see what comes across the transom.
See things like, are they photographs generally? Are they paintings,
yes,
engravings?
A lot of times, obviously, it's the photographs of the paintings, but we get sculptures, we get drawings. We have one in this issue that, you know, I wish radio could show this, but a woman who did a series on waiting rooms, because as she was going through her illness and she was an artist, she started to look at where she had to wait. And she wrote an essay that I find very poignant that goes along with the images. What are we being told in a waiting room by how that waiting room is decorated?
That's quite insightful.
It is. Incredible. It's very insightful. And she had some great comments in there that I think people would enjoy. So it's that sort of dialogue that's ongoing that I think the Healing Muse is unique among many of the literary journals that other universities do.
So how do people get involved? In other words, where do your submissions come from for an annual issue?
Oh, our submissions come from all around the United States, and even the globe, thanks to the web. If you go to thehealingmuse.org, you will find our website, and there's lots of information there about how you can submit. But I think what's happening is that people who are writers or artists are always looking for places that their work might appear. And so if they type in something like healing or health, or our website will pop up. Or we are, as you and I have talked before, our journal is available at University Hospital in the waiting rooms for patients. And we have found some people who picked it up and wanted to get in touch with us after that.
So. Well, that's an interesting segue to the effect. You started out by saying your mission is to expand the dialogue or the conversation,
yes,
between perhaps the patient and the physician, or the patient and even others,
yes,
about the experience of both being diagnosed and then the healing process. How do you feel the experience of participating in something like the Healing Muse, whether through writing or, you know, using the Healing Muse as a way of expressing your experience, how does that impact on the patient, I wonder?
Oh, we've had so many stories, Linda, from people that if after you have a diagnosis, the initial feeling for many of us is that life seems somewhat out of control. And what writing can do for us is to give us that control back, a sense of, I'm going to reinterpret this experience. I'm going to take what was devastating and I'm going to make something of it that I'm in control of.
Make it my own.
And so, yeah. I think that there has been some preliminary research, too, to show that for example, people suffering from diabetes have been placed in writing groups, and the control group doesn't do the writing, and then we look at patient satisfaction, how they feel about themselves and how they feel about the illness. And it does seem to appear that when we write, we feel better.
You know, it goes along with a lot of stuff that I've read about journaling. Yes. I mean, just in everyday life, people can find using a vehicle of a journal as a tremendous cathartic tool and a way of maybe gaining insight into your own feelings and experience. And in case it sounds like it actually has a healing quality to it.
Yeah, I think that it does. I mean, again, I go back to listening to our writers. I mean, not only looking at what they've put on the page, but when you talk to them in person, the act of writing has been very empowering.
How do you think the healing muse has changed over the last 10 years?
I think because we are in more places, our pool of writers and artists has gotten bigger, and therefore I think the quality of the journal continues to get better.
So it's really not just a local a local publication. It really has broad range, broad reaching impact, and not just impact, but you're receiving information or receiving input from a wide, wide range.
Yes, definitely. We do a survey every year, and I didn't bring that with me this time, but I think in this last journal, I think 28 states in the United States are represented this particular time. So it's coming from everywhere, and one of the things that's changed is that both Rebecca Garden and I are thinking we don't have to just deal with illness in the journal. And today when you and I are talking about some of the readings that we're going to do, you'll see that we've expanded this concept. So it's not just, oh, I'm sick, let me write something for the Healing Muse. It's really, I'm thinking about myself during a period of change, a dramatic change. And I think that's been pretty exciting about the journal, too, that we're getting bigger in terms of what we're looking for. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, let's try to take a look at some of these. You have two that we talked about discussing today. And if you would, do you want to read the first one?
I'd love to.
It's called Vows, I guess.
Yes, this is a poem by a woman named Monica Birchfield, and she is in Florida but studying for her master's degree in poetry from the University of Georgia. And she's a person who found us on the web and sent some poems in. I like this one very much. It's different, let's just say. So it's called Vows. My parents only touched when they fought. At night and outside, their shadows spilling the lawn like cloth across a loom. The four of us from the windows were embarrassed but pleased as their dark rib cages wove into one another until they finally merged, their many arms like a Hindu god dancing in our front yard. So when my brother calls asking if I believe in marriage, I remind him how the fights would end. My mother's cheeks yellow in the porch light, the moths that gathered there whirring too close to her lips, and my father leading her back inside with the promise he'd return with shrimp lo mein. Later, the scrape and clink of spoons against ice cream dishes as we listened from our beds, like wedding guests tired from traveling, ready for the couple to lean in and kiss.
Mm. Wow.
Now, that's an amazing
powerful
poem about marriage and about memory. And I think one of the things that the Healing Muse consistently does is to remind people how powerful memory is in our lives. Doesn't matter how old we are, you keep going back. And where we were certainly helps shape where we are and where we're going. So in this poem, the speaker's brother is the reason for the poem. The speaker's brother has asked her if she believes in marriage. And that seems to be a simple question, yes or no, do you or don't you? But what, of course, it isn't simple. And what it does to this speaker is send her back into their common past. And we get a picture of the vows of her parents. How were they displayed? And this is not an Ozzie and Harriet type family from the 1950s, the stereotype.
No, not at all.
And yet, it's a very powerful image.
Very powerful and probably more real and more authentic in some ways than certainly Ozzie and Harriet were. It strikes me, I heard somewhere recently that all of childhood is the reality we have and everything else is memory.
Oh, how nice.
As life goes on. Something, yeah. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, but that's nice.
But something about that, and I think that points to the fact that those early memories and experiences are indelible.
Yes.
And really shape who we are. And we spend the rest of our lives in a way kind of interfacing with those memories. And clearly that's an example there. Well, what's interesting is how would you say a poem like that improves our humanity? You know,
well, that's a hard question.
Or just maybe the humanity of healthcare, even how because I think there's a message in there in terms of that there is no perfection in relationships.
Yeah,
and there's something about strife and reconciliation.
Yeah,
which to me says an awful lot about the human condition, that not everything is perfect. We can have conflict. We can have, you know, disagreement.
Yeah,
but then this notion of the potential for reconciliation is clearly there.
I think you've answered your question brilliantly. Yeah. I mean, that's a marvelous reading of this poem. And I think if I were a therapist, for example, this poem would be very helpful to me in terms of what I'm looking for when I'm listening to my client talk to me. Mm. Because initially, I mean, if we talk about violence in a marriage, that is, you know, a terrible thing. Mm. And yet we do know there is violence in marriage. And this
poem takes different forms, too.
It takes different forms. And in this poem, the child has managed somehow to be reconciled to that and to see in her parents something larger than those fights. I mean, something kept them, I guess, still together. The ending image of the poem is, we are the wedding guests, and we are at their first kiss. Mm. It's interesting. I mean, I don't know that this poem solves anything in particular, but I love how this poem says life is messy.
Life is messy.
And somehow we come through.
This is true. You know? Let's get on because I don't want to, you know, run out of time. Let's get on to the second one we wanted to talk about. And that one is called?
Not for Sissies. Mm-hmm. And this poem is by a woman named Irene D. Hayes, who's currently living in the state of Washington. She's retired. And she tells us in her title, she's reminding us to think of the old Betty Davis line, that old age is not for sissies. So here's her take on old age. Not for sissies. I've managed to stumble into old age with some grace, though not enough to pull it off with impunity. A deep rumble or grumble just below my heart is not the vibration of youth, electronic or otherwise. It's clear my mind's been in a state for some time, and not the state of my residence, perhaps at an airport, rounding a carousel for the umpteenth time. Matthew Fox might say, it's all about a return to your original self, the invincible, authentic me or you that holds the God seed. Though I'm pretty sure my seeds are past their expiration date, and my journey to myself would find me lost on the interstate, out of gas. Bill Gates might suggest a reboot, but I fear I have software where hardware should be, arteries hardwired for the opposite, memory banks filled to overflowing, and the whole motherboard ready to fail me. And speaking of mother, her whole system rebooted itself a year ago when hospice came on board. Her sweet, original self is now constant. I've gotten to know this person, this other mom, and I can't let her go.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, here we are again with this idea of memory. It's, you know, your memory sends you back. And what is it that we are seeking? And I love how this poem brings me back to mother. You know, our first source of love and joy. Here's mother. And
also the kind of attitude towards aging, which has a certain kind of wry sense of humor along with it. You know, it's not for sissies.
No, so. It's not for sissies. And this woman clearly is a reader. I mean, she's reading Matthew Fox, the philosopher, you know, theologian. So it's a great, happy poem.
Well, Dr. Deirdre Nealon, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities and Editor of the Healing Muse, I wish we had more time, but we're running out of it. Where quickly can people get copies?
Come to www.thehealingmuse.org.
Sounds great. Well, we have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 WSYR.